why is Star Wars this line?
Okay, okay, all right, so this, how about question number two? In your opinion, does this affect, does the effect of the test reduce university creativity?
I mean, just have to cover the minimum. What you do for the rest of your time?
The way that I think about it, it's some institutions are not frontier, right? Although they're not really affected by that, the top institutions. This is more to regulate the laws, which are followers. So if you believe that creative comes from the top down, you know, from frontier to the followers. So basically here, you just guarantee that the followers are.
So it affects the bottom, but not the top.
Yeah. That's
what you're saying?
Yeah.
Bear in mind that each regular professional has the minimum list.
Right.
So there is no much space for creativity and in economics. They have just changed it 2 years ago. And they imposed more class hours and more.
They're actually dictating class hours.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Because then they will say, well, you can be an economist. I certify you as an economist. So they just announced the requirement.
Okay.
That's the Federal Council for Higher Education.
This is adding new meaning to the word autonomous university.
These exams are content-based, not cognitive-based. Is that correct?
Yeah. They have some portion that said like general knowledge.
Which would be content or cognitive process?
The content.
Yeah.
No, it's general knowledge.
The PROVAL is designed to be a curriculum-based test.
Curriculum in the content sense.
In the content sense.
Most of it is.
Okay.
What would be the consequence of, is there a proficiency line or a cutoff, a cut score that's established based on the empirical data to see that the, below the score that the universities can lose its accreditation?
I have that thing in my presentation. I can.
Okay.
It's relative.
But not.
It's normal. Okay.
But show that it would not apply to you as an individual student.
I understand.
In other words, no matter what your score is, you're going to graduate or not graduate, depending on your grades. I'm
right.
Sorry.
It's a measure of the institution.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. But
if
I want to
you can have a job as an engineer or a dentist, whatever, if the Federal Council gives you the permit.
Right. So politically. Is this popular or unpopular with undergraduate students?
Unpopular. Mostly.
Unpopular.
They boycotted in the very beginning. They did the our students in the law, because the first fields, the first majors that were covered by this exam were law, business, and civil engineering, as far as I remember.
Yes.
The law students at the University of São Paulo, they boycotted. That's why our university looked like terrible if you look at the data.
Uh-huh.
But because most students turned in their exam booklets like blank. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of boycott.
Today, is that also true today?
No, we don't take this exam anymore, right? We don't take the ENAD anymore. Usually
it
doesn't participate.
We decide, the University of São Paulo decided until they make it right, we are not participating.
What's right? It's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay, well let's get to that in a second. Faculty, what do you think of it?
It depends.
If you are a left-winger,
yes,
you know more.
If you hate it if you're left-wing,
yeah,
because you hate
yeah.
transparency and accountability, you are.
And the School of Education, our School of Education hates it.
Yeah.
Your School of Education hates it, but maybe physics,
engineering,
into that world. What about employers?
Usually they're against for ideological reasons, they're hardliners, but...
they're against it?
Yeah,
not the employers.
The employers. They're against everything.
I don't understand that, but as a general public.
As empresas,
the general public.
Certain employees. I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. Oh, they do like. I mean, the employers and the general public, they do like.
They like it.
Yeah.
I mean,
public opinion
very popular.
Show, like wide support.
Stick it to them.
Yeah,
get us better information.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're right.
All right, now, would you tell us the current political future of this test?
Oh, the PROVAL was exterminated by the Lula government.
Lula government exterminated this
as
test.
As it was. I mean,
and
they made substantial changes,
and
they replaced it for a more holistic approach in which you take more other things into account.
like...
If you allow me, I'll try to go first. Is it your last slide?
Yes, last slide.
Okay.
Go quickly.
Go right ahead.
Since 5 years back, get out of here if you want. Oops.
Even just like 5 minutes, so...
No, don't change. We just gotta get out of this one. Where are we?
I'll go very quickly through this. Most of this material has been covered by you, so
okay.
I'll just rush through.
Skip this, I'll come back to this later. Ways to regulate higher education, there are basically two things that you can look into. First, you can look at inputs,
yep.
So quality of students, quality of the faculty, okay. Like how much they work, how much they publish, what are their right. credentials.
Right.
You can look at staff, how qualified okay. the staff is. You can look at infrastructure, or usually governance, organization, and methods. That includes how much hours it requires students to get to be like have their diplomas accredited. Or you can regulate outcomes or outputs. You can basically look at graduation rates, proficiency of the students, scientific production, and other service to society. I would say that the broad picture in Brazil, we regulate a lot of this. We have lots of requirements on things that university must do.
Right.
Some of them are just guidelines that universities are recommended to follow. Other are very hard rules that university must follow in order to be accredited by the Ministry of Education. Mm-hmm. What the PROVAM was trying to do was to regulate some like this.
Right.
To implement regulation based on outcomes. Say, I'll just skip through this because we have this Anglo-American system. According, this is all, most of this information is according to the people that drafted this new regulation system in Brazil.
Okay.
We have this Anglo-American system. We need to rely a lot on quantitative outcomes in order to produce rankings on or things on observable inputs and outputs. This more French or European Dutch system gives more emphasis to other dimensions, which are hard to measure, but they're supposed to be more comprehensive, and in that sense, more fair. As I said, education and higher education, especially in Brazil, is very regulated, especially the inputs, the left side of my picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I can basically distinguish like three periods in regulation of higher education. Basically, the pre-1996, the PROVAM years, 1996 to 2003, and then the Lula years, 2004 mm-hmm. to the present. What I'm saying here is higher education, which includes only undergraduate and non-technological courses. Technological courses are like a different track in which students take basically 3 years, which are not equivalent to a BA or a BS degree. And they are supposed to be related by a different set of rules.
Okay.
The pre-1996 years, CAPS has been performing like some sorts of appraisals since like the 70s, as you mentioned, probably result of our Vanderbilt interaction. We regulate a lot of inputs, official accreditation of diplomas and certificates. This is like mandatory. In order to like pass a public exam, in order to be admitted to the public service, if you want your diploma to count points for you, it has to be accredited. So
right.
basically, official accreditation is,
right.
I don't know if you have that thing in the US.
We do.
We
do?
Yeah,
if you're not accredited, first of all, you can't get any Pell Grant or any money from the federal government, so you have to be accredited to be able to use federal grant, and that's a deal breaker, so no university wants to be unaccredited.
But
okay.
We are talking here about for individuals, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is also, right.
Nor can your students matriculate to graduate programs.
Right.
Yeah, and in Brazil you have to go through like two types of process. If one way, wouldn't you like to start like or open or begin this as a institution of higher education, you have to go through a process.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order to maintain your status, you have to go through another process, which
okay.
is kind of similar but has different things. In the 80s and 90s, we observed this rapid growth in higher education institutions and courses and majors, but with a decrease in quality, concerns raised about
mm-hmm.
what they call it, of these things.
All right.
And several of these features, especially the regulation of inputs, are still present until today.
Okay.
So then we come to this Provom years,
yeah,
which are basically this necessity or to sort of evaluate or to get a feedback from the system or how well our undergraduate programs are doing. So the centerpiece of this new system of higher education evaluation was this national test of courses, also known as Provom. Attached to it, we have other pieces, but in terms of hard accountability, the only thing that would count was the national test of courses. The ministry also tightened some rules, but what matters really at the end of the day is the Provom. So it's implemented by this INEC, which is this institution which is attached to the Ministry of Education. It's in charge of like producing exams.
Testing.
Mm-hmm. Multiple choice and discursive questions. Material included general, which are only a few questions, only a small portion of the program,
uh-huh.
but mostly major specific subjects. Mandatory for all graduating students in certain majors, not all of them, even though coverage increased over time. Individual results privately disclosed only to test takers. Okay, but as you mentioned, it's strategically, if you got a good grade, it's better for you to report it, and it goes down to the ladder. Inception in 1996, in which 616 courses were evaluated in three areas: management, law, and civil engineering. The last year of the Provom, which was 2003, we have like this extremely high number of students.
Yeah, almost.
And it's like a census. Also an increase in courses, and 26 areas or majors were evaluated. And as I mentioned, stiff opposition from the students' unions and private colleges.
And some public too.
Some public, but
like,
but for ideological
reasons. Ideological reasons.
Okay. For private universities, for private colleges, it's obvious. They were always like performing.
Well, they were going to come out lower, so the risks for them are higher, I assume.
And that probably answers to your question, in which what are the how are the grades or the institutional scores computed? So basically, you get the average of so you're looking at only courses or like a major in an institution. You're basically getting an average of what those grades are, and the 12% lower will be classified as E. The 18% above that will be D. Then you have this middle section here, 40% C. The above that, the 18% B, and the top 12% will be called A. So basically, it's a relative measure.
Mm-hmm.
So the percentages are predetermined.
They are predetermined.
It's always
it's not
for the same the group that's tested as
yeah.
each year.
It's relative, not absolute standards here. And as far as I remember, courses that get D and E, they can be shut down, or they might be shut down by the National Council of Higher Education. So it's a bad idea to be there. It changed a bit in the next year. Then we had, instead of having this purely relative ranking, we had something that if you are you compute basically for each major, you compute what is the average and the standard deviation. For one standard deviation above the average, you get A. For a half and one standard deviation is a B. This portion here, half down, half up, C, and so on. So we just changed a little bit over time. Results, this institutional results were widely publicized in newspapers, magazines, and the press, TV, and etc. And we're used to rank institutions. Mm-hmm. And that's important, especially for incoming students. Mm-hmm. The guys that are sitting there at the end of their high school years and say, where should I apply? What kind of university do I want to attend? They could use this information as sort of a guideline. That would stimulate competition and quality improvement among higher education institutions. And that was also contributing to allocate government funds, like grants and research money. Instead of evaluating institutions, actually, you're evaluating courses. So different courses, different majors within the same institutions would get different concepts in the program. One of the cornerstones is that of this whole evaluation system is that the quality of the course equals the quality of its graduating students. The students who take this exam at the last at their senior year at college. Well, as I mentioned, there are sanctions for non-compliant institutions. If you get a D or E for three consecutive years, you could lose your official accreditation. But unfortunately, that threat was rarely fulfilled. There's anecdotal evidence. There's no like hard evidence or very scientific about like the effectiveness of the program. But you have lots of anecdotal evidence pointing out to investment in faculty qualification by higher education institutions or to improve that scores and maybe able to charge higher tuitions or attract better students. Or in some cases, this I know because I taught one of these classes, like classes to students just to coach them to take the exam, which might be bad in one hand. Maybe you're just training these students to pass the test. But in other hand, that would probably improve their proficiency on the subject. It depends on the test.
They have no, they don't, the students have no incentive to do well on the test.
They do.
Why?
Because if you're applying for a job, for instance, you have a soft
capability. Well, I thought you said they didn't really use the employers didn't really look.
No, they report to the student individual.
If you're looking for a job,
might require employers.
They would send you a letter saying your grade was, your score.
You have like a soft accountability.
Okay.
And if you do very, very well, it advantages you.
Criticism to the program. Some of them are reasonable, some of them are purely ideological. So people claim, this is mostly claimed by private institutions, that the quality, the variance of this course is explained, a huge fraction of it is explained by how good they were when they entered a higher education institution and not what they learn about that. So this is not about value added. This is what's about like you test the students at only one point.
That's right.
And what you
it's
learn about
exit
them.
Test.
It's an exit test. So you're not comparing value added by the institution, but you're just taking into account what they know when they leave, which depends on what they learn and what they used to.
Depends on the creaming that institution does.
Yeah. Also, the absence of absolute standards. Everything, all grades or all scores, institutional scores are relative. You don't have like national or absolute standards say this is reasonable or advanced or anything like that. Given that, you cannot compare score across time or across majors. So you cannot compare physics with economics because you don't have absolute standards. And you cannot compare scores over time because the exam may be harder one year, easier the other. So it's hard to compare how good they are. Grades they don't use item response theory. And for that specific reason, these things are not comparable over time or across majors. And usually, especially during the first years, students' unions organize lots of boycotts, and that caused, especially in the very first year, lots of distortions in the institutional scores, because they didn't know how to. They computed blank exam booklets that were turned in as a zero. So you get the University of São Paulo School of Law, which is probably one of the best in the country, performing very bad, simply because most of the students decided to boycott the exam.
There are other ways to manage that problem, I think, other than calling it a zero.
Yeah, I mean, one way is basically to ignore it, say, I'm not taking that into account, or to weight it in
or,
another
or
way.
To weight the weight yeah. The major of the program score by the proportion of non-compliance exams.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But they didn't want to do this. They want to make sure next year they will come.
Yeah. See, this is, Britain has a way of grading research quality, as you know, the research assessment exercise, and they punish programs where the faculty do not turn in what they have published by reducing the grade of the program by that factor. So they make a big incentive for the department chairs in each program in Britain to encourage their faculty to submit their publications.
Good. Okay, but then this new government, this leftist government, was elected in 2002, took office in 2003, and to handle higher education evaluation, he appointed some of the most like hardline oppositors of the Provence. That's why they tried to sabotage the thing in any possible
okay.
way.
All right.
So they had to do the Provence in 2003 because it was too late to cancel it.
Right.
But they managed to pass new law in 2004, creating a new evaluation system.
Okay.
In which now you take into account other dimensions, other indicators of input or performance, including expert opinion and self-evaluation by the higher education institutions.
Uh-huh.
That's always taken into account. Provence was replaced by this ENADE, which is this exam which is taken by a sample of students in each institution.
Okay.
But the good thing about it is that they take the Provence, the ENADE now in at the end of the freshman year, so this is sort of entrance exam. In the end of senior year, so you manage at least to have some idea of value added by the institution. That's probably the upside of it.
Okay.
Okay? 30% of the questions now are less narrowly focused on the contents of that specific major, more like general knowledge.
Wow.
And this system, which is called CNICE, for which ENADE is just a portion of it.
Right.
It classifies institution of higher education to 5 categories, from 1 to 5.
Okay.
And the worst can suffer sanctions. Basically, they have to sign a protocol explaining or what they're going to do about that, how they're going to solve their problems. If they fail to, it's basically like a recovery plan. If they fail to do that in 18 months,
they're
out for sanctions.
If we're to understand this, the implications of this, it is that and a program in higher education can be judged on gain scores between freshman and senior years, not just on the exit test.
Wow. Yeah.
Even more interesting than I thought.
Which is very hard for us because we take the best students.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Much
that's why
we're quite aware of that problem.
And we do not participate. University of São Paulo choose not to participate in this program. Yeah.
Really?
Now we don't lose our accreditation if we do not participate because we're autonomous.
Yeah, we are bigger than the rest of the system. So
okay.
And institutions that don't fulfill that they're doing bad and don't fulfill the protocol can have admissions canceled.
Okay.
Lawsuits against administrators or shut down of specific majors or the whole institution can be shut down.
Wow.
By the Minister of Education. Bottom line, at the end of the day, what this new system tries to do is to look into other hard-to-measure dimensions, which creates some problems.
Yeah.
The process is it's highly complex, it's expensive, and highly vulnerable to politics, corruption, and influence.
Very interesting. We are going to have to pause for lunch, but I think there will be questions on this in the afternoon.
I mean, feel free at any time to ask us if you're interested.
Thank you. Really interesting. Wow. Oh, it's really interesting.